How are you doing, Wesley?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Absolutely fantastic. Very excited to talk to you about your brand new book.
Well, thank you.
But before we do that, though, 40 years of marriage, and I just wanted you to just showcase your relationship. Let the world hear what 40 years of marriage does to the mind, body, and soul, and why it's so important to an author.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. We met when we were fairly young. We were both in graduate school, and it was a idyllic relationship, really, and we raised two children, and unfortunately, she contracted a very rare form of lymphoma and died on Mother's Day in 2017.
Wow. Wow. Do you pull from that energy of that love?
It's interesting. You know, I write a blog and people tell me I'm much more productive when I'm unhappy. And so Judy's death obviously made me unhappy, and I was pretty prolific, but now I'm happily remarried to a woman who edited my book. She's a professional editor, so life goes on.
Man, now being married to an editor, that I think that's been one of my biggest challenges as an author, is the fact that, oh my God, who's going to edit it? Because it's almost like you go through the judgment stage where they're going in there with a keen eye and sense, and it's like, oh no.
Yeah, when we first started dating, I gave her the first chapter of the manuscript, and I said, if you want to know what I was like in high school, check this out. and I thought she was going to be incredibly praiseful and think I was an absolute genius. And after she finished the chapter, she said, hey, what do you want to do with this? And I said, well, of course I'd like to publish it. And she said, well, it needs some work.
Yeah. But see, that's what I love about those editors. I mean, they go in there with truth.
Yeah, she's a superb editor, and she's such a graceful writer herself. She's one of these people whose first draft sounds like they've been going over with a fine-tooth comb.
Yep. Now, your book today, oh boy, it takes place in South Carolina? Because I'm in North Carolina right now.
Yeah, it takes place in a little town called Somerville, South Carolina.
Oh, I know it.
Oh, you know.
Oh, yes, I do.
It takes place in, you know, Somerville's population when the novel takes place was 3,700 people.
Wow.
And now it's 57,000. It's the seventh largest city in South Carolina. So today, oh boy, takes place in one day at Somerville High School in October of 1970. And as the adolescents are going through the changes which all adolescents undergo, the town itself is beginning to change. Mm-hmm. There's a counterculture beginning to arise, and you have preppies and these neo-fight hippies, and then you have traditional country boys. And so there's a lot of conflict. Behind the scenes, there's Vietnam integration. So the novel features lots and lots of characters, takes place in one day. It's ultimately comic, and it's very cinematic.
I love the idea that you included the Vietnam War in this story, because it's very quickly becoming one of the wars, such as the Korean War. Nobody is talking about it. And when you talk with the veterans from the Vietnam War, they don't really want to talk about it. They'll say, okay, thank you for thanking me, but let's move forward. But I mean, you're keeping it alive inside this story.
Yeah. And it's, of course, the male characters have to worry about a draft.
Yes,
which is in the back of their heads. And I'll never forget when I got my draft number. I found out about it through a newspaper, and they had a list of birthdays,
It
was nerve wracking, as you might imagine. But I lucked out and had a number of 278. But one of my friends, who's actually one of the characters in the novel, is based on him partially. He did end up getting drafted, but thankfully he didn't go to Vietnam.
What did you have to do to discipline yourself to find focus on just this one day? I mean, because this book feels like something that so many of us can really relate with. I can relate with it because I'm 61 years old. I love the fact that because you put us in this place and you make it very safe for us to really take it all in.
It's the progression of the novel goes through a school day, and I taught English for 34 years, and so I know teaching inside and out. I know it from the adolescent's perspective and from the teacher's perspective. And so what I tried to do in the first four chapters, there are periods 1 through 4, and I would go from class to class, and the characters in the novel, more or less, are the perceivers, and the omniscient point of view is funneled through individual consciousnesses. So you have a whole lot of people, whole lot of perspectives, and then at fourth period, there's a chemistry accident, and the entire school has to be let out. And then after that happens, all chaos breaks out, and people are running around town wild, and it's fun and fast.
Are Rusty Boykin and Ollie Wyburn, are they real people? Because I love those names, man. Those are real radio names, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, I'm really big on name symbolism. Rusty Boykin, he's an amalgam of a couple of people, but he's partially me. I mean, I used to have red hair, and my nickname was Rusty. But as I tell people, he's a lot nicer than I was in high school, and he's a lot stupider than I was. But Boykin's an old South Carolina name, and it's like he's kin to a boy. Ollie Wyburn comes from Minnesota, and he's a really highly intelligent boy, a boy with enormous integrity. And he and Rusty are foils in that they're not much alike, except both of them do possess the ability to stand up to peer pressure. And in the last third of the novel, they find themselves in a car together with a girl from New Jersey named Sandy Welch, who's a wonderful driver, and she's fast. She's like a Natalie Wood character. And so you have these, I'm going to use an old-fashioned, impolite term, rednecks chasing Ollie and Rusty and Sandy as they careen through Somerville.
Wow. And see, and when you speak of Somerville, I know those back roads, man. Especially when you take Somerville down into Charleston on that back road, and you go back there by the old rice fields of the old days and things like that, and the different plantations. I mean, it's such a great place to write a story.
Well, you know, this actually that highway is Highway 61 that goes runs parallel to the Ashley River, and that's where the car chase is taking place.
Oh my God. Yeah, you just I can, because I'm here in the South, I can envision it. But the way that you paint the picture, though, I mean, it really does invite the listener to come down and go, this is where he was writing this book. Wesley wrote the book right here in this place.
Yep, I sure did.
Now, how long did you hold on to this book before you released it? And the reason why I bring that up is because my first book was written when I was in the 11th grade because I wanted to stay in school. But it took 32 years to put it out there. What about this one?
Well, that's amazing. I can't wait to read your stuff, by the way.
Thank you.
I wrote it about 10 years ago because there was a contest with the Hub City Publishers that every other year they'll publish a South Carolina novelist. And I was rushing to get it ready, and it didn't win. And so I sort of put it down. Then my wife became ill, and I really didn't start again until I married Caroline, the editor, and she and I worked on it together. So it more or less just sat for 10 years until I picked it up again.
How much of your creative spirit as that author did changed in that 10 years? Because I mean, you know, every day we change, but I mean, but to go back into those paragraphs, what did you experience? Because I know you're a writing teacher, so what was it like for you to go back?
It was very smooth. I mean, I actually didn't change all that much. I fleshed some things out and made transitions a little smoother between episodes. The novel is sort of fast cut, fast edited, like a movie might be, where you every 4 or 5 pages you're shifting from place to place. So I picked it back up, and it was really almost 80% done, I would say.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad that you brought a thing up about the movies, because I right away when I was reading it, it's like, oh my God, this is going to be a series somehow, some way. But it was like, okay, how can one day become a series? So he's got to have a sequel to this book then. He's got to do day number two somewhere along the line.
Well, thank you so much. I would love for this piece to get picked up by either a series or a movie. I think it lends itself to it, and some of these adolescent themes are universal. You say you're 61. What year did you graduate?
1980, sir.
Okay, 1980. I graduated in 1971. I think anyone, this novel would appeal to anyone who's ever been to high school, because essentially, whether you're wearing bell bottoms or skinny jeans, your adolescence are essentially the same.
You know, one of the things that I really took to heart in it, and I thought, wow, that was kind of ballsy for him to talk about this. But I mean, I never ever thought about the bullying and the suicide that took place in the 1970s.
Yeah, you know, that suicide that begins the book, or the mysterious death, is sort of a MacGuffin, like the Hitchcock. Alfred Hitchcock had these sort of false symbols that you think the movie's going to be about, or the novel's going to be about. Yeah.
That's so funny that you bring that up, because I always call, you know, they're like little mini cliffhangers, but it's like, no, you're not going to be able to predict this, because I need you to go to page three.
Yeah, it was, I didn't really plan this novel. I more or less wrote it every night, and when I knew what was going to happen, I would quit writing and then pick it up the next day. And the mysterious death of Trip Trotter is mentioned throughout, but we really don't come to an absolute understanding of what happened, though it is a suicide.
Wow.
And he was such a jerk that that lots of people really weren't necessarily happy he had died, but weren't mourning at all.
Yeah. Do you ever get out in the outdoors to do your writing? And the reason why I bring that up is because my last book, there was a majority of it that was actually written down there at the campgrounds on John Island.
Really?
Yes,
really?
Sir. Yes, sir.
Well, you know, Aaron, you need to come to Folly Beach where I live.
I love Folly Beach. Listen, Wesley, I was at Folly Beach when the land used to connect to the lighthouse. Nowadays, it's like all we have is a memory.
Yeah, well, you have to get on a kayak to get out there now. But I used to grade my essay. There's a wonderful bar on Folly Beach called Chico Feo.
Yeah.
And it's al fresco. And it's on sort of a Caribbean, Key West type of vibe. But I used to grade my essays there. And I'd drink two beers and three essays per beer, and then I'd get home, because I couldn't. I graded very carefully, and it took me a long time, but it was nice to be out there.
Wow. Wow. Man, you make me yearn for Folly Beach right now.
Well, seriously, next time you're down here, get in touch. I'll take you to Chica.
Absolutely, absolutely, because it's always fun to sit down with another author, because our imaginations never turn off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what's a website where people can go to find out more about the book Today, Oh Boy, and find out a lot more about you?
Okay, well, I have a blog, and it's W as in Wesley, L as in love, M as in more, 3.com. Also, if you go to the Kirkus Reviews and type in Today, Oh Boy, in the reviews, there's an excellent review there that gives a very succinct plot summary.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Please come back to this show anytime in the future. The door is always going to be open for you.
Well, I appreciate that, Aaron, and this was a wonderful interview, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, you be brilliant today, okay?
Okay.